Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside segment. I'm Harold Fisher. Every year, we take a moment to discuss women and empowerment during Women's History Month. Well, Monday is International Women's Day. And we are seeing some novel achievements by Black women this year that make us stand up and really take notice. And tonight, at our Women's Roundtable, we examine what's happening right now and what's on the horizon for the empowerment of Black women. My guests are Sophia Nelson, journalist and author of The Woman Code, 20 Powerful Keys to Unlock Your Life, and Dr. Jarpa Dawuni, political science professor here at Howard University. Lines are open. I want to hear from some women tonight about what empowerment means to them in any large or small measure. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. You can tweet me at HFisher, WHUR, or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Sophia, good to hear from you again.
How are you, my friend?
I'm hanging in there. Yes, indeed. And Dr. Dawuni, thank you so much for joining the conversation.
Thank you for having me. I'm
Absolutely.
Looking forward to the conversation.
So this question is for both of you. I'll start with you, Sophia. How do you define women's empowerment?
You know, honestly, I don't like the word empowerment. I really like the word transformation. I think that empowerment is a term that has a whole lot of connotations to it. And I think that for Black women, I think ever since Michelle Obama became First Lady, I think we've been in this transformational place. I just wrote a piece about this, Harold, in the Griot the other day, kicking off Women's History Month, and that from Michelle Obama to Stacey to now Kamala, we're in a place of great transformation as Black women, with power, with beauty, with ownership, with representation, with having a seat at the table, and literally being the second most powerful person on earth. So I don't, empowerment's not my thing. I'm more into transformation.
So what does that mean? What does transformation mean then?
It means rising above the stereotypes and things that have so often defined us as Black women, limited us as Black women, put us in boxes, unfair boxes, unwelcome boxes. And I believe we've gone way beyond, and we're constantly evolving and constantly growing into these, like a butterfly, a transformation from that dark, dank cocoon to this amazing, beautiful butterfly. That's how I see us.
Dr. Dawuni, do you want to change my question, too, or do you want to take a shot?
I absolutely love your entry point. And you would think we've had this conversation before. I don't also like the word empowerment. Mine is for a different reason. I think that when we say we're empowering people, it sounds as if they don't have power and we're giving it to them. And so instead of, you know, my preferred word, different from Sophia's own, is enhancement. So that means that we already have the power. We're just moving it to a different level. Now, moving away from the example that Sophia gave, I will go way back into history and building it from the continent of Africa, where humanity is supposed to have emanated. And we know that Africa is a place where we have matriarchy, matriarchal systems, where women are in leadership positions or were in leadership positions. So if we go way back into history and we're looking at the powerful roles that Black women, women from the continent of Africa played on the continent as warriors, as leaders in political decision-making processes, as leaders in religious bodies, and then we see how those matriarchal powerful positions controlled by women translated across the cross Atlantic trade into the United States and the New World. And we see how Black women continue to play powerful roles even during the times of slavery and all that. So when we look back into that history and coming to the point and examples that Sophia mentioned, we see that Black women have always been empowered, enhanced, transformative leaders. And that is what we need to recognize. History is important for defining the current.
One of the things that we have seen quite recently are some really high-profile women, some of them very new, some of them we know, Sophia mentioned, you know, the vice president, for example. That's a slam dunk. A newer name, obviously, Amanda Gorman, the first Black youth poet laureate who spoke at the inauguration. But then we have, you know, Roz Brewer, the new Starbucks CEO, HBCU, a.k.a. woman from Detroit, okay? And, of course, we can't, you know, forget, you know, Maya Shaka just announced within the last 24 hours the first Black woman to be a referee in the NFL, Jeanette Epps, who will be the first Black woman to walk in space and live and work long-term on the International Space Station. Those are some of the high-profile names and faces. But we are still in the midst of a pandemic. We are marking a year or so now, Sophia, for, you know, for the names that aren't in the news. Those women that are slugging it out every day, how do they empower, transform themselves when it seems, you know, nature in the form of a pandemic has put that much more pressure on them?
So one of the very sad points in a very sad saga of over 500,000 Americans dead from COVID is that the African-American community has been hit disproportionately hard, as you know, and Black women in the workforce have been devastated. Black and brown women, Latina women as well, because they're in those positions, right? Like you just said, where they're slugging it out, they're the caretakers, they're working at the nursing homes, they do the cleaning, they do some of the jobs that other people don't do. And not to say we don't have a professional class of sisters, of course we do, but the vast majority of us are still not there. And so when something like this happens, it has a ripple effect in the community that is extremely difficult to overcome and to deal with. And Black women who are in that place right now, I think one of the most important things that we're going to have to do, Harold, when this is all said and done, is deal with mental health and wellness. Because Black women still, by and large, aren't allowed to acknowledge, feel, deal with their emotional pain and the stress and the strain that they're under now, as wives, as mothers, as daughters, as maybe not just the one earning the money for their household, but they're helping mama, they're helping auntie, they're trying to be a caretaker. And, you know, you talked about Alpha Kappa Alpha, and of course, Sora Roslin will be the new CEO of Walgreens. She's leaving Starbucks. And you look at the extraordinary sisters, Kamala, et cetera, so many, too many to name. But the unsung heroines of our community have always been these ladies that we're talking about, just like now with COVID, who do the work that nobody sees. It goes back to slavery. It goes back to Jim Crow and all the way up through this very moment. And sisters like myself and the good professor on the line here and all the other extraordinary women we mentioned, we all stand on their shoulders. That's just real. We don't get where we are without them, our mothers, our grandmothers, our aunts, the lady at the church, the lady down the street, our school teachers who helped us to climb. It's just, we owe them better. And I hope that when all is said and done, they get the financial support they need. The Congress is playing games. I'm not happy about it. None of us are. Fighting about $15 minimum wage is ridiculous when it really should be $20. So, you know, I think we have a lot of work to do to honor those women properly.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. This is a Women's History Month conversation. We are talking about the empowerment, transformation, and the evolution of Black. How's that? I got them all in. Is that good?
You're awesome.
Thank
You're
you. Awesome. I do what I can. We are talking about Black women, specifically during Women's History Month, and how they are rising up and continuing to improve not only their lives, but the lives that they touch, the careers and the world that they touch. I want to go to the phone lines real quick. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Rochelle, calling from Woodbridge, Virginia. Rochelle, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
I was just thinking, you were talking about female empowerment. I just wanted to say that I think that female empowerment is just being to better tomorrow than you were yesterday and being active in your today.
That's a preach right there. I like that. That's a, you know, that's a word. Rochelle, well said.
Well, indeed.
What is that? What it means for you specifically?
Oh, for me specifically, especially with the pandemic, because I'm a nurse, I just think that you know, we've got to be better, and we've got to keep reaching. And you can't take the excuses of generations past into your generations forward, and it's all about leaving lineage and legacy.
Rochelle, thank you so much. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Brandon, calling from D.C. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Yes, thank you for having me.
Sure.
Yeah, my call can be answered. I would like to also commend these two women for basically being on the platform that you have at WHUR so we can hear strong women, you know, basically talking from the view that they have been a part of for many years. But like I shared with the person who had picked up the phone to answer it for me.
My producer, go right ahead.
I'm going to say this because what makes it, I have a wife, 28 years, strong woman. She's a strong woman, right? And I have two girls in my family that are very strong. And the thing I get with them is saying, why we keep using the term black when we much better as a black person that we find our identity in the following generation come, they know the narrative about black because we've been called re-fourth of a human being with that word black. Mm. And we're talking about a German Shepherd can have a nationality. Why we can't? So if we build that power, which is ain't nothing but an illusion, and added to these sisters' identity, maybe our young women can see, you know, themselves more than which had us in slavery, like one said, for so many years.
Well, let me see what Dr. DeWooney has to say about that, because I personally don't have a problem with black. I like black. Always been. Always will be. My daughter's black. My mother's black. Stepmother's black. My sister's black. I don't have a problem with it. But, Dr. DeWooney, your thoughts about that?
Yeah, so there, I just want to make sure I got it. The line wasn't very clear. So could you summarize what the...
Well, basically what he was saying was, you know, using the identifier as black women is a, you know, kind of a throwback, and it holds women back to a certain extent. I don't have a problem with identifying as a black man. I know some people prefer African-American. Some people prefer a person of color. Okay, I don't like getting into the semantical discussion about that. You know, I like black, blackety black. Okay, that's what I do. Okay, but you know, from your perspective, Dr. DeWooney, I think you may have a more unique and thoughtful perspective on that.
Yeah, definitely. I appreciate a caller's opinion on this issue. And you're right, Harold, that the phrase, the terminology that has been used to describe people, the other, as we would call them, have changed over time. One time in history, the United States, it was the N-word, and then it became the other N-word, and then it became colored, and then it was the you know, African-American with a hyphen, without the hyphen, yeah. Black American, and all of that. So I think for me, I agree that I am black, unapologetically black, and that goes back to our consciousness, drawing to the history of what it means to be black and looking at it from a positive perspective and not to be crowded by the values that have been placed or the negative values that have been placed over what it means to be black over time. So if we go back to understanding our humanity, that humanity started from the continent of Africa among black people, and we are proud of that blackness, the consciousness, the heritage. There's nothing wrong with being called black. And so I don't see it as a disempowering word. It's an empowering word. And even in places where it has been disempowered across the historical spectrum, we need to reclaim the power in the word black.
Mm-hmm. Brandon, thank you so much for sharing with us. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're at the Women's Roundtable. We are examining Women's History Month, specifically talking about the empowerment of black women and where they are and where they are going. And I would just like to piggyback on that last piece, Sophia. Is it not more about how you identify and define yourself rather than how others may see it based on a name or an identifier?
Well, you know, I wrote my first book about this, Black Woman Redefined, redefining the image and the stereotypes and the tropes about black women.
So that was a great book, too.
Black women, thank you. You're kind. You were a part of that, and I appreciate you so much. No, I mean, it's good to have the brothers' voices in there. I think it's important that we as black men and black women, to the caller's point, I think try to build one another up and build our identities the way we want them to be. And I, like you, I prefer black. I don't like the whole African-American thing, but that's another conversation for another day. And I think that, you know, we have to define ourselves for ourselves, right? I mean, that's Audre Lorde talking there, or Toni Morrison, one of them. And the bottom line is that if we don't define ourselves, then others define us. And that's where we get into trouble. We're dealing with that right now in real time in 2021. As much as things have changed in this country, they have not changed at all.
Yeah.
And so black folks are dealing with some stuff right now. Again, everything that hits America hits us doubly hard. If white unemployment is 7%, ours is 14%. If white folks are getting hit hard by stuff, we're getting hit doubly hard. It's the same old, same old. So I think it's really important for us to define ourselves and to make sure that we push back and we step up in these diversity, equity, inclusion conversations that everybody wanted to have post-George Floyd. But if you look at all the Fortune 500, all the boards are still all white and majority male, right?
Yeah.
You know, stuff is not changing the way it should. And part of that has to do with the misdefinitions of black people in this country and how we're still not seen as human. We're still not valued. Our lives are not valued.
Well, hold that point. I'm going to let you finish, but I've got to take a quick break.
Okay, no.
And don't forget, you can hear this and every discussion via podcast on WHUR.com, posted before 9 p.m. every night. The Daily Drum will continue on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2. Download the app from Google Play or the Apple Store. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on WHUR. This continues on SiriusXM channel 141 and 96.3 HD2 in a few seconds. Welcome back to The Daily Drum, the Insight segment on SiriusXM channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight we are talking at the Women's Roundtable about the empowerment of black women. Of course, this is Women's History Month. We're talking about where women are right now and what is on the horizon for them. My guests are Sophia Nelson, journalist and author of The Woman Code, 20 Powerful Keys to Unlock Your Life, and Dr. Jarpa Dawuni, political science professor at Howard University. Lines are still open if you want to chime in at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tweet me at HFisherWHUR or find me on Instagram at Harold T. Fisher. Sophia, you can go ahead and finish the point you were making.
No, I was just simply for our listeners just trying to tie the dots. When you talk about defining us and the words that we use, they matter. And for so long, from 1619 forward, we've been defined a certain way, and it's not positive. And it has real impacts on our day-to-day living as human beings, how we're treated in corporate, how we're treated when we go to the grocery store, how we're treated when we're stopped for a traffic violation, whatever it is. And I just think this is time, and I'm so proud, Harold, of these young folks, my nieces, your daughter, this generation, the doctor's children. It's having a generation who marched, who just amazed us all this summer. I was in awe of these young people. And it reminds me of their baby boomer grandparents. Us Gen Xers, I don't know what to say about us, Harold. I don't think we're doing too much. I don't think we're doing too much.
I think that, you know, for some of us who are getting closer to a certain age, you're getting closer, but certainly not there yet. I think that it is important for us to talk about, to encourage, to write about, to give those younger people something more to see, including the Kamala Harrises and the Roz Brewers and the Maya Chakas and the like. And which goes back to my very next question, because, you know, Dr. Dawuni, despite the challenges, and challenges to me is such a weak word. Mm-hmm. Last year was rough. Mm-hmm. It was a terrible year. It was horrible. Even outside of the pandemic, mm-hmm. you know, we had social justice mountains to climb that involved not just Black men, but Black women. Those we lost, those who survived to raise their voices, and yet, you know, Dr. Dawuni, this is still a great time for Black women. Why do you think it is that it is a great time right here, right now, today?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right, Harold. If we look at what happened last year, it's just kind of a continuation of the trauma and the different forms of discriminatory practices that the Black bodies, whether male or female or other, have experienced in the history of the United States and really globally around the world. So what is this transformation that we are hoping to see, to kind of borrow on Sophia's word, that we are seeing that this is a time that we're getting into a place where we can say, okay, this is a time for Black women. And what does that mean? In terms of the time, we're looking to see that there will be an increase, not just in the symbolic representation of women in leadership positions like Kamala Harris or Howard Alum, a Black woman, a woman of color. But we're also hoping that those symbolic representations, the numbers that we can count, will translate into actionable items that will trickle down across the spectrum for Black women wherever they may be located. So the symbolic representation in terms of leadership in politics, in terms of hopefully leadership in other places, in corporate boards, in higher education, in healthcare, that time will be transformational, not just for those in those positions, but it will send a signal to all other Black women, to women of color, to girls, that you can do it and that this is really your time and that it's your time to build up on the generations of women who have fought to bring us to this space and time.
Back to the phone lines, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Mike calling from D.C. Mike, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, first of all, Harold, I was calling because you inspired me to call in because I like the fact that you defended the term Black.
Oh, yeah.
Especially when it comes to us Black women. And for some reason that we are still trained that we are supposed to hate being called Black. That is one of the problems in the Black community right now. We got to stop letting other people define who we are. We know who we are. And we got to stop begging for other people to look at us as human beings. And I think that's one thing that's holding some of our beautiful Black sisters down also. Still trying to beg the oppressor to look at it as human beings, that's never going to happen. So we have to look at each other and empower each other. We got to encourage our young sisters to become more entrepreneurs. The brothers also, instead of worried about asking for somebody else to try to get it higher. I think entrepreneurship is a good thing for young ladies right now. And one of the ladies that I want to use it as an example is Stacey Ladislaw. Stacey Ladislaw, the singer from Southeast Washington, D.C., she had the ability to transform Anacostia and East of a River into a viable tourist attraction. But because of poor management and nobody understood what this queen sister brought to the table, she never abandoned the Black community. She always stayed in the Black community. She didn't do what so many other Black people do, where they make it to the top, they run out of the Black community and go live directly into the white neighborhoods and help build that community up. And we have to, and so to me, I wish that if I had the money, I would make a movie of this queen sister life, because I think that would encourage girls to empower girls a lot based on her. Because can you imagine that they do a story about her and use the young ladies from Southeast before Anacostia become and morph into the new Georgetown version too. Hmm. So, you know, that's what I want to say. And ladies, if it wasn't for the Black ladies out here, the Black community would not survive. We have got to go back into loving each other, especially Amen. Our queen sisters, and Amen. Give them all the respect that they deserve. So, Harold, once again, thank you, thank you for defending the word black. And ladies, keep up the good work. Peace.
Right. Mike, thank
Harold,
you so much. Yeah, sure. I just want to say I love Stacey Ladislaw. I was actually listening to her last week.
Yeah, he just messed me up. He took me back to the seventh grade and dancing to Let Me Be Your Angel. It's a slow dance song. So.
I know. Hey, look, I have a few. Yeah,
I think I still have my 45 somewhere. I got to look for them. They're probably in the garage. But he makes a very good point. And Stacy is one of those unsung heroes of the community. And, you know, we do need to try to find a way to salute sisters like that that did not get where she should have gone, but did great things in terms of her community and her people.
Absolutely. Definitely well said. And here's something, you know, for both of you, since we have, you know, the Michaels calling in. Mm. I saw something on social media, and it was meant to be, you know, funny, and it probably was. But, you know, everything that is funny also has some basis in truth, whether it's yours or mine or what have you. And it said, you know, ladies, not all of you are going to get a Russell Wilson like Sierra has. And,
Amen.
You know, but, and yeah, it's funny. But what? But then I think, why not? And to that point, you know, and I'll start with you, Dr. Dewuni. What role do men have, or should have, in the transformation, the empowerment of women? You know, what new things, what new thinking should men have when it comes to helping to lift up women, whether it's the woman on your street or the next Kamala Harris and all of the women in between?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, thank you. So, you know, I just want to go back a little bit to the previous caller's point, and he makes a very important point. As I was saying, black is black and black is beautiful. We know that song from the 70s or 80s, I'm black and proud. And I want to kind of reference that a bit to Audre Lorde's work. And she says that the master's tools will not dismantle the master's house. If black people are forced to keep redefining themselves, so the names that you're going to use, the food you're going to eat, the clothing you're going to wear, the hair you're going to wear, it will never please the master, whoever the master is. So we have to accept who we are and see the strength and power in who we are, and therefore define ourselves for ourselves. So coming back to the question that you asked me, how are men going to be part of it? Let me say that black men, and to many the credits can be given, have always been the backbone for our strength too. So I don't want to say that black men have always been problems for black women or disempowering black women. There are many men, and I'm very careful with the feminist scholarship. We use the word essentialism. We don't want to group everyone. All men are this and all women are that and all that. So we have to be mindful of the men allies, the men who have been the supporters and backbone for black women. So how can we move that agenda forward? Once again, I know I'm a political scientist, but I'm also very much history focused. We have to look back to where we came from as black people. Within the African communities, we had black men and black women play what we call complementary roles. We supported each other within these systems. So unlike, once again, how systems and literature has made it look as if all black men in Africa are patriarchs and they are against women, that is not true. We still have complementary roles. So for us to understand how to move forward, we need to understand our history. And let me end on this point. You may know about this bookshop on Georgia Avenue, and this is not a plug for any particular bookshop, called Sankofa.
Yes.
Or Sankofa, okay? Sankofa, that's how you pronounce it. It's a Ghanaian word, and it's one of the big indigenous words in Ghana, what we call the Dinkra symbol. It's a symbol of a bird that has its neck to the back, a mythical bird. Sankofa in the Cree language in Ghana means go back and take. And what does that mean? It's a mythical bird that is used to explain the history of people. That says that for you to move forward, you have to know your history. So to answer that question, for us to move forward, for men, black men to continue to support women's success, we have to know our history of how we played complementary roles. Because if the sky is going to fall on us, it's going to fall on black men and black women, and not just on black women. So we have to continue to fight cooperatively in solidarity for the good of all. And that all means the black community and all of humanity.
Your thoughts about the role that men can play, black men, Sophia?
So you know how I feel about this, because when I wanted to do Black Women Redefined and we did the research, I was adamant that black men's voices had to be present, because in order to understand black women, black men and black women go hand in hand no matter what we do. Like she said, it goes back to our history in Africa, to our journey here and the whole of slave ships and forward to now. And I think one of my great heartbreaks in life, and we were talking about this, and it is one, is that I don't see that love between black men and black women like I saw with my grandparents. I saw my maternal grandmother alive at 91, and my grandparents were married 55 years before granddaddy died. He was from the Deep South, you know, big, tall, red bone, you know, fought World War II. My grandmother was just drop-dead gorgeous. They fell in love. They had 12 kids. You know, and they never were unfaithful to each other, unkind to each other, just a different generation. And like she said, very complimentary. They worked. Mm-hmm. They worked for what they had. And they kept their family together. And they were part of a generation of black people that did that. And again, I don't know where the breakdown really occurred, Harold, but we're broken down. And I think that we need to get back to just basic love and respect. And I don't know if you saw the Billie Holiday biopic on Hulu. I thought it was fabulous, but I wept a lot through it because it hurt my heart to see how those brothers treated Billie and used her and abused her and sold her out to the FBI, and how the FBI knew they could send the brothers in to plant drugs on her and sleep with her. And it was vile, it was hurtful, but it was sad because we've been played off each other for so long and hating on each other instead of, as the good sister said, being compliments. It's not about my success or your success, or if I'm higher or you're lower or vice versa. It's what our great-grandparents and our great-great-grandparents and our grandparents understood. It was about us being in it together. And I think we've lost that, and it's hurt our community. It's hurt our economic power. It's hurt our kids. It's hurt our legacy. It's hurt us, and it's unfortunate.
Maybe it is time for for us to look back, and when I say look back, I don't mean staring in the rearview mirror, but I do mean to understand, as you mentioned in the Billie Holiday example, of looking at the mistakes that have been made. When you're talking about black men, you know, supporting, you know, black women as they, you know, continue to rise, looking at the mistakes that have been made, whether those were malicious, intentional mistakes, or malicious or intentional deeds, or genuine mistakes when things just happened, decisions that were made that did not work out, that were not empowering, not supportive to black women. And then it's like the doctor who says, you know, to the patient, you know, the patient says, "Doctor, it hurts when I do that." The doctor says, "Don't do that." And maybe that is, you know, one of the next steps as, you know, as we move forward, you know, lifting as we climb to support black women as they continue to shine when we see these, you know, these shooting stars, you know, the Kamalas and others.
You know, Harold, if I may, because you're right, I want to share something quickly because I think it still gets back to these definitions, right? I was at the hair salon the other day, and the sister that does my mom's hair, they were talking, and she's talking about how upset she was with her 10-year-old son because he only liked light girls or biracial girls. And she said, "Well, why don't you like that girl?" He said, "Mom, I don't like nappy head girls and the black girls. They're not pretty." And she said she sat him down and read him the Riot Act for a minute. And then when his daddy got home, he had to step up and read him. And what I'm seeing is that this is even filtering down to our boys at 10 years old in the year 2021. So there's still something being said. I'm a professor. I teach at Christopher Newport University here in Virginia. It's very white, very Caucasian, well-to-do school. But we don't have the young black men on the campus. If we have black women, there might be, you know, a handful of them and no black males. And there is, and when there are black males on these campuses, particularly majority campuses, they want to date out of their race, right? And so there's still this thing, Harold, that black women are dealing with. Young, our daughters, our nieces, et cetera, that they're not pretty enough, that they're not desirable, that they're not enough. And I just want to say to the brothers listening, black women love you. I said this in my book 10 years ago this May. Black women love you. We've always loved you. And I think that it would be nice to feel like once in a while black men not only defended and protected but honored black women. And I know there are a lot of good brothers that do. You're one of them. But we need more. And we need dads to be really good to their daughters and take them out for tea dates and teach them how to dance and teach them how a man treats a woman, all the stuff that our white female counterparts get in spades. A lot more than we do. And it just helps you to be a healed, whole woman, right, when the stuff is right from daddy to the time you date to the time you get in your husband's house and all those things. And I think so many of us didn't get married, aren't married, been divorced a time or two or some three. And it all goes back, Harold, to what happened at home, how we were with daddy, how daddy loved us or not, and how we defined ourselves as lovable or not.
And, you know, I think Dr. DeWooney, she makes an excellent point. And, you know, and certainly from the perspective of, you know, international sisters, you know, sisters from the continent who are now living here, you know, those who mirror the intellect and the achievement of yourself. Mm-hmm. And who I think this is an opportunity for, you know, black women who are not immigrants to perhaps also try to fully understand those like yourself mm-hmm. who are. And that's mm-hmm. I think that's another form of empowerment, transformation, evolution.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let me piggyback a bit, and I don't like the word piggyback. I tell my students, let me go back a bit.
Go ahead.
It just came out so quickly. What Sophia was saying, you know, and as we're discussing, where did the breakdown happen? Okay, that is where you're right. If we need to find a solution to a problem, we need to go back and find where it went wrong. And we can't point at one thing. The problem between black women and black men, it's not just one thing that we can say this is what happened. And Sophia was right. It's the pop culture. It's all these representations that we're seeing with social media about what beauty is and all these standards. But it also goes beyond that. It goes to the stripping away of our humanity. Once again, this whole idea of whether you're black and all these terms that are used to describe us, which we have to claim black and be proud of. But it's also the policies that were created. Now, some of you may have heard, the listeners may have heard about the Moynihan Report. One of the findings that really, in a nutshell, blamed the breakdown of the black family on women because women were too strong. Now, if there's anything that we want now, it's about strong women. But the black women have always been strong, but they were seen as the foundation of their families. They held families together. But then these policies were created to make them look like they were the problem. And so we started having even policies that were being created that would strip away the manhood or the male or, the masculinity of men. And therefore, it means that the woman becomes oppositional and the enemy. So we need to look at the holistic aspects, whether it's on the religious, the political, the economic, social, cultural policies that have stripped away and tried to dissuade us from being together. So once again, coming to the point, the question you mentioned, Harold, very quickly, is that when I always tell people that I am going to be very transparent about these conversations because I read and I teach my students, that I have had to unlearn, relearn, dislearn, and continually learn what it's the black experience in the United States is, and to be respectful of the experiences of my cousins, my brothers, and my sisters who are African-American and experiences the historic trauma they have been through. It's when we get to that point of respect recognition, then we can hold hands as sisters and as brothers and walk together to the land of empowerment and transformation and all the change we want to see. We cannot get there if we continue to point fingers and blame one another. So whether it's black in Africa, black in America, black in Caribbean, black is black. We need to work together.
And, you know, to your point about, you know, strong black women, I have never held that the term strong black woman equates with being obtuse or hostile or mean-spirit or foul or any of that. And I think that we often see in pop culture, black women will say, well, you know, he doesn't like a strong black woman. No, he just doesn't like a woman who yells at him. But that has nothing to do with you being strong. You can be strong and still be polite. You can still be strong and be an intellectual. You can defend and your point of view through facts or anything else, you know, without being unpleasant. And that goes for men too.
Yeah.
And so I think that in talking about strength, that we need to make sure that the upcoming generations do not equate it with being mean-spirited or hostile or unpleasant, because even in that there is strength. But I wanted to know, because we don't have a lot of time, so Sophia, I did want to ask you, you're relaunching the Woman Code?
Yeah, it was 7 years ago this year, and we decided that COVID was really giving women a lot of distress, like we talked about a little bit at the outset of this show. And I wanted to help women cope with COVID with the code. And so Mika Brzezinski and I of Morning Joe and Know Your Value teamed up. She did the forward. We're going to be doing some great stuff together. We got a lot of corporate partners, organizations, AKs, links, you name it, Junior League. And we're going to be doing a pretty big launch of virtual book clubs, et cetera. I even have a line of wine, Harold. It's amazing, from Bro Winery here in Virginia. Wine for the woman's soul. It's Woman Code Wine, because how can you have a book club without wine, right?
Yes, but so what's the alcohol content? That's my question.
No, it's real alcohol.
Yeah, I know. Are we talking 13, 12? Are we talking something around 6?
Well, you know me pretty well, so it probably has a pretty good alcohol content. But look, I want people to be happy and to enjoy their bubbles, but I want women to connect with each other. And I told the men to, look, if you got wife, daughters, sisters, buy a copy for them. And a lot of men have read it with their daughters, whatever, and they come up to me and say, not what I thought, the Woman Code. But it's very helpful, and I learned some good stuff, too, as a male executive who, you know, works with women, things that I can do. So, absolutely. We just wanted to try to do something to help. It's in paperback, so it's a lot less expensive than a hardcover, and I'm really excited about it.
I want one.
You know,
me too.
I'm always willing to learn.
I bet you want that bottle of wine is what you want.
Oh, yeah, well, you know, then there's that. some final thoughts from you, Dr. Dewuni, on Women's History Month and this transformative time for black women.
Yeah. I mean, Women's History Month is a great time for us to reflect on women's history, to reflect on the successes that have been made, and also to be cognizant of the existing challenges. But most importantly, to strategize for what the next agenda is going to be for moving women's rights and women's issues forward. So I think that this year's own couldn't have come at a better time, as we have to reflect on women's roles during the COVID-19 pandemic, reflect on the consequences of the pandemic on women, but also look at it from a global perspective. Some of the interesting developments that are happening, for example, for the first time in the history of the world, we have a black woman leading the World Trade Organization as Director General, and this is a woman from Nigeria, Dr. Ngozi Okonjo-Iweala. So among many other places where there are still challenges, we see that progress is being made, but there's still a lot more that needs to be done. So let's continue the fight. Let's continue to work together in solidarity. And that progress can be made if we hold hands and we continue to keep our eye on the ball.
Absolutely. Final thoughts from you, Sophia?
I'll end where I began, which is that Women's History Month is powerful just as Black History Month is. And it's a time for us to stop and pause and just be excited about the amazing things, Harold, where you started with women. You know, the amazing things that our sisters are doing, that women are doing. And I really just want to say thank you. You've always been a great feminist. And you love women, and you're good to women, and you've always been good to me with my books and everything. And this is an example of what I think the three of us were talking about as we close, how we can just do little things to support each other and cheer each other on and encourage each other. And I love WHUR. I'm about to send a tweet to y'all and tell you how much I love you. And, Doctor, it was my honor being with you, and thank you for all you do at Howard and all the great work you're doing with our sisters there. And just thank you both for everything you do.
Well, you know,
thank you, Sophia. Just have a quick one. The Howard is always open. You're welcome to come back and have a chat with us anytime on campus when we get back.
Thank you. I love that. Thank you.
Well, like I said, you never want to be the smartest person in the room. And, you know, who knows? Sometimes when you realize that the smartest person in the room may be a black woman, you may want to sit still and listen. There you go. with a glass of wine,
and a book in hand.
Speaking of wine, is it time yet for wine? It's time to go watch Coming to America too. Everybody's waiting on me. So
right there you go. Look. I want to thank, you know, both of you so very much for, you know, participating in this conversation, Sophia Nelson, Dr. Jarpa Dawuni. I appreciate it. Stay safe, and I'm sure we'll be talking soon.
Thank you very much, Harold. Thanks for having me.
Bye-bye.
That is it for this edition of The Daily Drum on Friday, March 5th. For News Director Renee Nash, reporters Millette Green, Bramante Bryan, producer Candace Atkins, and engineer Bobby Adams, I'm Harold Fisher. Now stay tuned for Unheard with Wes Hall. Good night and have a wonderful weekend.